When you drive a vehicle so reliable it's backed by a 10-year, 100,000-mile limited warranty, you stop thinking about what you can't do and start doing what you never thought possible. Visit your local Kia dealer today to see what you're capable of in a vehicle that inspires confidence around every corner. Kia. Movement that inspires.
Call 800-333-4KIA for details. Always drive safely. Limited inventory available. Warranties include 10-year, 100,000-mile powertrain and 5-year, 60,000-mile basic. Warranties are limited. See retailer for details.
You positive heads out there, it's so good to be back with all you beautiful reflections of the one source consciousness that creates and animates all things. If you're new to this podcast, of course, we're super happy to have you here. And if you've been listening and enjoying for a while, I would be super grateful if you would please take a moment to give us a review on Apple Podcasts. It's one of the best and simplest ways to pay it forward and help others find the show so that they too can tap into the powerful perspectives and positive vibrations we are collectively emanating. The other unique and magical way to share this show is by sending any friends you think would benefit from listening to this podcast our Game with the Universe link at positivehead.com/game. Also listed in the show notes, which will serve them up a quote-unquote random episode when they click it. Just instruct them before clicking the link to close their eyes for a moment and sincerely ask the universe to cue up the episode that contains the insight and perspectives that they most need to hear at this point in their life journey, and then click to listen to whatever episode is synchronistically served up to them. I have heard time and time again from people about the incredible results they received playing the game. So just tell your friends, magical results are guaranteed or their karma back.
Hello, all you positive heads. On this week's P-Head Posse episode, our guest is Stefan Ravalli. Stefan used to consider himself someone that teaches meditation and conscious living. Before that, he was a leader in the hospitality industry. Now his mission has been to integrate these worlds, making him more like a conscious living field correspondent. He teaches how unromantic avenues of life, like working in restaurant service, can be elevated to your own self-mastery laboratory. How meaning, purpose, and power can be brought into jobs we consider dreary or lowly, and how service and hospitality principles can be brought into our everyday lives, making us more mindful human beings in every way. Hi, Stefan. Welcome to the show.
Hey, thanks for having me.
Thank you for being here. Yeah, I'm excited. Like reading through your intro, I was thinking of all of my time in the service industry back in you know, my college days and my high school days. And I like this topic. So I'm excited to dive into all this with you. But first, you know, as we do on every one of these episodes, would love if you could tell us a bit about yourself and about your background and growing up and how, you know, you got to where you are now.
Yeah. I grew up in Canada. I'm from Toronto. I was generally really interested in psychology. I studied that in the beginning. I switched to film because I just tend to follow shiny objects. And this'll definitely define the rest of the story. In film, though, and during this time, I was just extremely, extremely kind of like neurotic and overwhelmed with by my own mind. I always had a really intense, powerful one that caused me a lot of crises moments when I was younger. And I kind of really struggled to be a person that felt they could relate to the world. So after film school, I really didn't even find myself that interested in kind of remaining in, you know, the sort of cellar of being a screenwriter and, you know, wrestling with my inner demons to like pump something out for, you know, spend a year on it or two, and maybe it'll never get made. And in the Toronto film scene at the time, I just found myself blocked and wanting to kind of want to leap into it. And then hospitality like caught my eye, and found myself really attracted to the idea of bartending. And I don't know what it was, because it wasn't, you know, a profession that was considered like artistically like of merit, you know, or so I thought. Mm-hmm. But then I somehow just got like, I got kind of thrust into working in fine dining and with like the right people. And these were bartenders that were artists and like these sort of like dashing alchemists that would like, for example, I asked this one guy who was mentoring me, like, hey, you know, what's the best like cherry liqueur? Like, where can I like, you know, what's a good one for me to buy? He goes, what? Make your own, dude. Like, what are you talking about? And I was like, wow, that's so cool. And so in the beginning, I think I was drawn to bartending to kind of get me out of my shell and help me be able to relate to people and kind of like, you know, the demands of that, to do it in a very sort of like fast pace in the moment kind of way, was just kind of really good for overcoming that aspect of myself. But then, and this is a pitfall, then I got really wrapped up in the sort of art of it. I was like, ah, the art. And I kind of, you know, became part of that kind of league of bartenders, craft bartenders, we called ourselves at the time. And that was kind of ascending in the kind of early 2000s, early to mid 2000s, as this sort of like really esteemed position where you're both like a culinary kind of figure, and also like, you know, you're a personality with these like, you know, hospitality and hosting skills as well. And it just kind of was like real kind of glitzy, glamorous thing to sort of be part of. And but at the same time, I fell back into that trap of being this person that couldn't relate to the world, because I acquired all of this knowledge about drinks and all of these like this aesthetic idea of like what a great drink was. And the world wasn't nearly caught up. And so I, you know, was not able to relate to the world again, because I was just drowning in the materialism of bartending. The materialism of all the stuff I knew and all the stuff everyone else didn't, and became frustrated with humanity and resentful. And just became yet another one of those people that struggled with service. I just found my own way to struggle with it. I mean, you know, in this profession, everyone just develops resentment for humanity for one particular reason or another, which is tragic. And I didn't think I'd be one of those people going in, because I just, you know, I was just so optimistic about this whole profession to kind of like really allow me to work on the skills I need to do. So, so this became a problem. And so I then fled North America. I fled Canada first. I fled to California to go work at a bar there, and ended up running a bar in Northern California. And then I started traveling the world bartending. And I got some really interesting positions, and I got sent to other countries to open bars there. And it was a really cool life. But I was unfulfilled, and I was realizing that this should be a lot more fun than it is. And I wasn't having fun. But then I met a meditation teacher. He taught me meditation, and that like changed everything for me. And I was drinking quite a lot too. And actually romanticizing drinking, because, you know, I thought it was fine as long as it was high quality drinking, right? And whittle down my health like that. So I was one day, 6 weeks into kind of meditating daily, I had like a beer in my hand, and I just looked at it and I said, what am I doing? This is like, every sip of this is taking me away from a mental state that I was absolutely happy with. And I realized that like working on myself and my own, you know, sense of like, you know, inner health, freshness, you know, vitality, makes me not require these external things that'll just kind of distract me from it. And right there, I just went dry. I just dropped drinking and didn't pick it up again at all. And then I became a non-drinking bar manager, with comical results for, for years. And then finally it just became too nagging, of a proposition that I needed to do work outside of this format of hospitality. And so I fled again to India to learn to be a meditation teacher, and spent like 6 months in India, and came out, you know, teaching meditation. Now, you know, hospitality Stefan left behind. That's so dirty and filthy, full of dirty, filthy people. I'm, you know, I'm this meditation teacher now. I live this, you know, clean, dignified life. And I can just sit on a chair and have people surround me and say, oh, you're so wise, Stefan. Thank you for these teachings. Look at my new life, right? And then mm-hmm. I just, this, again, this nagging sense that, like, here I am, you know, I'm just like, I think that I've relinquished my past. And I think that I've hit a reset button. And I think that I'm, like, sitting here, you know, in this sort of, like, sterilized environment. And that's where all the work's happening. That's where I'm really developing myself. I don't think so. There's something wrong with this. And I thought back to hospitality, you know, my hospitality career, and that what I loved about it was that it put me on this like rocket fueled, like self-mastery journey. I mean, it was a dirty, rough, grimy one, but I bumped into a lot of walls, but I really got like, you know, like a handle on myself in a way. And actually I had been, before I even got into meditation, and I was pretty, you know, I wasn't very aware of kind of Eastern mysticism and practices that would later inform my life. I was really following a lot of Japanese bartending and then a few, like kind of these like really, famous bartenders that were proponents of like the Japanese way of bartending. And that was actually greatly influenced by, chadao, which is, tea ceremony. Japanese tea ceremony, which, and Chinese tea ceremony, which is a Zen practice. And those bartenders in Japan have this kind of real Zen sensibility, when it comes to bartending, and a Zen sense of self-mastery. Like I remember reading this Japanese bartending book, and it said, a bartender shall never show off, you know, he shall never take any of the attention away from his guests. He is just, you know, a very, like a host with a very light presence. And I was like, what? No, I show off. That's what it's about. And so, but like these like things it had me do, really brought me outside of who I thought I was. And I'm remembering that. And I'm remembering all these things I've learned in hospitality. And I'm remembering that my life has always really been about service, in every way. I just kind of changed how I did it. And then I remembered, like, you know, people always like look back at hospitality and say, oh, I learned all this stuff, even though in the moment they hated it and, or just struggled with it a lot. You know, even though there's these moments of enjoyment, there's just, it's generally like wears people down. And I said, what if I could go back into the world as a hospitality professional, as somebody who is now doing it mindfully, getting joy out of every moment, like Zen masters do, they can be doing any job. And they could be getting joy from it. And what if I used it as this sort of platform to see, you know, how far I've gone and how far I have to come, and also take these principles into life? Because there's this great bartender, Jim Meehan, he once said, what if everyone in the world did their job like a hospitality professional who really cares? And this, you know, a real great bartender who really makes you feel special. Like the world would be transformed. And so I said, let's do all this. Let's just put this all together rather than me just like looking back retrospectively saying like, oh yeah, I guess I learned a bit, even though, wow, that was rough. You know, let's now properly do this and learn lessons in the moment and then teach people these lessons I'm learning and challenge myself to like acquire more skills to just be better at interfacing with the world and on the ground level, not in some ivory tower teaching. Not in some conscious community. I'm really not part of one at all right now, which is really interesting and in a sense for me right now, liberating. And so that kind of became the Serve Conscious Project, which has started with me writing. And now it's podcasting. And now I'm kind of putting it together into like, you know, kind of a holistic coaching practice where, any aspect of service I can help coach people on. And if they're, you know, dealing with struggles. So kind of that's where things are at now. So, you know, like I identify myself as this kind of used to be meditation teacher, become hospitality plus meditation teacher. Cause I guess, and I don't really believe it's good to identify yourself as something you used to be. But now what I am, I just feel is very in process. You know, it's like what I used to be, is now kind of getting fit into this new container, you know, like these big principles I was taught, huge. Like I was trained in a Vedic meditation tradition, you know, the Vedantic in a way too, which is like a yogic philosophical exploration about like the very nature of your being, you know, and it's very big and it's very abstract feeling. But I feel like big principles like this need really small containers, to really test them. And so that's kind of what I'm doing right now. It's all very in process. So, yeah,
I love that. I think that it is so refreshing. It is such a refreshing perspective and area of life to really bring this, you know, this mentality into, and to bring this level of, you know, consciousness into, like service, truly like true, what we think of as service, like the service industry, yeah. Right? Which, like you said, I think in your intro that, you know, this is typically the industry or the area of life that we kind of look at. I think you said it was very unromanticized, right? It's very, or unromantic. It's like, oh, we think of it as more of like a lowly job or something that you have to do to make ends meet, but it's truly an opportunity to, I guess, could you speak a little more on that? Like, what do you, how would you reframe it for someone who, for example, let's say someone's listening to this and they're like, man, I really want to be this, that, and the other thing, but right now I need to be a bartender or a waiter or, you know, a server of some sort. And I don't want to do it. And it feels demeaning to me, or it feels unromantic, as you said. How would you reframe that for them? Like, how would you approach them with your version?
That's a really good question. And there are so many things to look at, you know, in terms of like what that position is in life, what that role you're playing is, you know. Basically, it's practice for something bigger. Everything is, right? Everything, like how you do anything is how you do everything. How you brush your teeth is, you know, how you run your not-for-profit. You know, like the small is the big, you know. So did you brush your teeth like consciously and presently today? Then you'll be of better service to the world later on, right? That's the first thing. But secondly is you don't even need to consider these things smaller. This little thing like bringing someone a meal is insignificant to, let's say, you know, some sort of like startup you're working on or something quote unquote meaningful or purposeful. You know, those are constructs, you know, that we've applied to ourselves that are very techno-industrial, that are very aspirational, that are very kind of like, you know, conditioned into us to thinking we have to have a certain amount of like power and influence, you know, given to us by society in order to say we're doing something meaningful. And so if you're in this sort of position of service, you know, it is kind of low on the techno-industrial totem pole, you know? And if you are in some way obligated to fulfill the needs of others, then you are like in this position of like servant, you know, almost. And it's like servile, and it feels like indentured and enslaved. But that again is completely a mental construct. When you are in service, you are in a position of power because you are literally the key holder of satisfying other people's needs. And you are the administrator of an environment that is foreign to others. So like when people come into a restaurant, they're actually like scared and uncomfortable. There's a crowd full of strangers. You spend 40 hours a week there, let's say. They don't. It's unfamiliar to them. And they sit down, they look at a menu, they don't know what half the stuff is. They're uneasy and they just want a meal. They have to fulfill their most like primal need right now. and so you are like the gatekeeper of that. And so you're holding a lot more power. And so, I mean, they could, you know, abuse you. They could be demanding. They could look down upon you. But that's not because of the position you're in. That is because of the whole legacy of issues and trauma they've had in their life. And they've simply just brought that into this very moment where they're in front of you right now, a little uneasy. You know, when people are uneasy, all their issues come up. And, you know, you happen to be a target for that. But it doesn't mean you're lowly at all. It's all them. So that would be like the first, that's a good place to start. You're in a position of power and they're in a position of weakness and they have been weakened by life. And whatever they're saying to you that you don't like is because of that. It's nothing to do with you. They don't even know you. So there, operating from there allows us to look at them compassionately. And when you're able to do that, you know, look at someone compassionately when they're lost. You know, and be like a host that makes them feel comfortable and found again. That's really powerful. And that will have like a rippling outward effect that allows them to, you know, they have a nice night. They feel satisfied. They feel attended to. Someone broke through their resistances, you know, and like was patient enough to handle their own like difficult qualities, which they may be aware of, you know. Then they're going to be a little nicer to everyone else afterwards, perhaps. And then there's this radiating effect. So just from there, you have tremendous power. And then you get to do that over and over again. Like you have more opportunity to be in contact with people and flick these switches than many professions do. So there's like these like little, you're just like this little like covert operator, basically, you know, that can like plant these like little seeds of goodness, joy, positivity. And, you know, it has an incredible, incredible possibility there. Like, you know, and then if a lot of people did that, the cumulative effect would be enormous, you know, on like global state of consciousness.
Yeah. I just got this image while you're describing that, like as like, it would actually even be fun to you think of yourself as someone almost like undercover, like you're undercover in this role in order to be of service, in order to help as much as you can, in order to, you know, push out essentially like the good vibes and be like the vibe keeper even, or, you know, help guide people on their way. You're a way shower in the role of a bartender or a server. And how powerful does that make you feel if you could kind of assume that idea that like, oh, I'm undercover here. Like no one even knows what I'm doing, but like what I'm doing is like, I am, you know, I'm doing something. It's like surreptitious has a bad connotation, but it's, it's on the low. I can't think of the word, but you're a good doer the low. So I love that. I love that illustration. Yeah, that's powerful. And yeah, so wait, talk a little bit more about, so what did you call it? Serving consciously? So how can people, I know you mentioned as well that you're podcasting, so how can people like engage with this project and engage with your podcast?
You know, I'm you can find the podcast anywhere where podcasts are, pretty much iTunes and on my own site, you know, just like with you guys at Positive Head, all the episodes are there, you know, and you can comment and you can write me personally. I have this tragically underused section on my website, which is, tell me your stories. You know, I will talk about them. Like throw down what you're experiencing, that is difficult in your life of service. And, I will very happily contextualize it within the content or personally back to you, depending on what your preference is. Because I'm just really curious with what people are faced with and really excited at the possibility to look at the way of alchemizing that, you know, for lack of a better word. You know, I love using the word alchemy, not so mystically necessarily, just taking something, you know, that's difficult and rolling it into something that's, valuable and instructive. So that's, yeah, that's many of the ways that you can interact.
That's huge. If you're going, I see people in our Facebook group, Positive Heads, all the time going like, family, let me tell you about what's going on with me and give me a different perspective of this. Like, and that's what you're doing. That's like what you seem like a master in doing. It's like, give me your bad situation and let me show you how you're actually in this like power position. Right.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, I love doing that. And so that's my favorite kind of engagement. I'll take any engagement, though, you know, But yeah, you can tell me how great everything is and I'll say, well, thanks. Great. Hey, tell me something horrible happening in your life. that's a little more exciting for me, but yeah.
Oh, I love that. That's beautiful. And yeah, we'll put the links to that in the show notes as well. So people can, you know, go to your website and check out the podcast. And awesome. Well, so, how about, you know, you've already given us some great wisdom, but what's one thing you think is important for every Positive Head listener to know or understand as they continue on their own journey?
Okay. I think, we were talking about this, earlier, actually, where, it's all forming right now.
Yeah, sure.
Cause it's big to like the one thing.
Or it could be a few.
Okay. Yeah. I'll start. No, once I get rolling too, it'll be hard to stop me anyway. So okay. Like we can start small anyway. I think, it really doesn't matter what it is that you're doing and even like what opportunity you have to be whatever it is you think you are. So like a lot of the times, you know, people like they might be like working as a server and they're like, oh, you know, I'm actually an artist. Like I'm actually like in a band and this is not where I really get to be myself. You know, wait, just, you know. Just check me out this Saturday at the whatever place, me playing. That's where I'm really me when I'm on stage, you know, when I'm like, yeah, when I get to express whatever, all the stuff going on inside of me. But I really think that we experience so much frustration when we are in situations where, we feel kind of like, you know, slightly alien, like, you know, let's say this artist is then serving like a 70-year-old stockbroker, you know, and they don't feel like they can let out truly who they are and they have to censor themselves. But it's really not about that. It's not about like just overtly expressing this, you know, all of your ideas, opinions, you know, all of your artistic sensibilities. Truly making contact with the world can be in the simplest ways that don't even require words. It doesn't even require a good script. Like, for example, like if you were to offer someone more water, you can totally put your fullest of self into that. And you're literally saying something that's a standard restaurant script. Would you like some more water? And you don't have to be a rock star artist when you do it. You can put so much intention into it and so much consciousness such that it can give someone anything, everything they need in that moment. And that's really who we are. You know, like if you think... Like even let's say you're like, you know, like into yoga, meditation, you know, esoteric stuff, shamanism. You've gathered all of this stuff and you're working on yourself and working on yourself and building yourself until it's actioned, until you bring it into the world, it's an incomplete system. And actually, until you bring any aspect of yourself into the world, it's totally an incomplete system. It's valuable in its own way. But that period where you make contact, that's when everything fully realizes. And it doesn't mean, you know, it doesn't mean playing a teacher role. And it doesn't mean, you know, giving the absolute best advice. It just means giving the moment and that person everything that they need, whatever that is.
Mm. Wow. Powerful. Absolutely. It's, I feel like you're highlighting, you know, how actually simple things are, you know, like how powerful, like there's power in the simplicity of things. Like there's power in the simple reframing of things, you know, like what we experience in our life. There's we're just so used to seeing it a certain way. We're so used to telling certain stories about it. And it really is just so much simpler than we're thinking. You know, so much simpler than we think it is. It's really just about kind of deciding through a new lens of like what we want to see and how we want to interact with people and the world.
Absolutely. Yeah, I agree. And I, you know, I have and still do struggle with keeping things that simple. And for me, like service helps with that. You know, it gets me out of the tangles of myself, you know, into the needs of the present, you know, which are often so much more simple than whatever like narrative is spinning around my mind. And so it gives things such a finer point when I can bring my attention to that, you know, to the needs of the moment. And I think, you know, we spend so much time like bumping into walls and creating all these expectations for ourselves only to exhaust the complicated aspect of the journey, you know, to arrive at simplicity, you know?
Yes, exactly. Exactly. Mm-hmm. Yeah. We make things so much harder than they need to be exactly. It's like exhausting ourselves in the complications and then arriving back in simplicity. Oh, I love that. That's so true. So true. Sorry, excuse me. Cool. Well, I also have a question, you know, that we ask everyone who's on the segment because we love stories here. Do you have any, you know, fun or inspiring stories of manifestation or synchronicity? I'm sure you do.
Oh yeah, sure. So let's go back to India. We are in the Himalayan foothills. I'm deep in teacher training, meditation teacher training in the tradition I teach. Have been trained to teach. I was meditating like 14 hours a day. Meditation and asanas, like yogic postures, 14 hours a day. You know, just kind of locked into this like this inner world that I was fairly comfortable in because I loved being isolated, you know, in certain ways. I love being my own person and autonomous. And being in retreat or being in, you know, a sort of monastic setting was comfortable for me. I don't have to worry about anyone but myself in a way. I've kind of defined my life, you know, of travel, of, you know, just jumping onto the next boat, you know, and seeing what happens. And then, and actually leaving in my wake a lot of confused, annoyed, romantic partners. But in this moment I was like, I think I really want like a real partner. And I think I really want to just like, I really just think this is the next like place of maturity for me. And it just really sounds beautiful to co-create with someone. And, you know, I was always trained with the sort of like, principle of like constant evolution. And that means go where you're not. So like, if you're like adventuring too much, then slow your ass down, you know, and like stay in one place and appreciate where you are. Maybe become part of a community, you know, and I'd always felt so ghostly, you know, always a tourist in some other, you know, community. Mm-hmm. And I was like, yeah, just like settle down and build with someone. It's time. And I was like, no rush. You know, I'm just becoming a teacher now. And then I finished my teacher training, you know, came frolicking out, glowing, frolicking through India for months. And then as I approached South India, I reached out to a friend and teacher. And he said, oh, awesome, great. So I went to, I was going to go to Chennai where he lives. And then I get there and he's got a car for me and he drives me to Vellore. We got there at like 2 a.m. because it's like really far from Chennai. And I go to bed right away. I wake up in the morning. He knocks on my door and he's Indian and he's like, hello, welcome. And I was like, where are we? He's like, Golden Temple, many blessings. I was like, Golden Temple. And I look outside and there I am like right at the foot of, Sri Narayanipuram. That is the world's largest golden temple, built in the last 15 years or so. It cost billions, which this saint there, who's believed to be an embodiment of Lakshmi Narayani, in a male body, female goddess in a male body, he raised billions of dollars to build this. And incredible place, really powerful. In fact, I felt kind of sick like the first day there, because it just kind of purifies you. My lymph nodes were like swollen. It was like really intense. And I'm like, so what's up? Like, what are we doing here? And he's like, well, there's another like American teacher here running a teacher training, and people are meditating and learning to teach meditation. And I was like, cool. So I hung out with them a bit. I kind of kept my distance because, you know, I know they're going through like a monastic experience. And, but one of them just kind of like, you know, felt fairly drawn to me, and I felt fairly drawn to her. And then we, you know, just continued chatting, and then, stayed in touch, after the teacher training. And then she, after India, was going to Taiwan to live with a Zen master, to learn, Cha Dao, which is the way of Chinese tea ceremony, which is kind of a Zen and Taoist and Buddhist practice, kind of all rolled into one sort of mindfulness tea preparation practice. And I was like, okay, well, let's go. I'll join you. And then, and it was there that we realized that we were like pretty meant to kind of be together. We stayed in touch, and then she became my wife, and we moved to America together.
Wow. Love that.
And she said, I forgot this part. This is so important for your thematically. She had a vision of me, when she was, living monastically, you know, doing her meditation teacher training during one of her meditations, a vision of me specifically. And then, I came stumbling into her life. the timing was uncanny. Everything was just kind of uncanny for this to occur. I mean, I was just wandering India thinking I was going to leave soon. And then this happened. So,
yeah. And do you think in that situation, for example, that, you know, you like received the thought one day, like right before this happened, it's like, actually, like I would like a partner. And it's like, I always wonder how that works. I mean, time isn't linear like we think. So it's all kind of happening at the same time. But it is interesting because it's like, did you have the thought first and then attract that in, or was it there coming and you were like sensing it and having the thought? You know what I mean?
Oh, absolutely.
I like to think of it sometimes like that.
Oh, definitely. Oh, the causality is absolutely up for grabs. You know, this could have already happened and just kind of like grabbed me by the shirt and told me to catch up, you know? Yeah.
Totally. Totally. Yeah. I love that. Ooh, and it's 111 right now. 111. Auspicious. Awesome. Well, thanks for sharing that, Stefan. That's so beautiful and such an amazing way to meet your wife. And yeah, so I guess before we wrap up, you know, is there anything else that you feel really called to share with the audience? Anything that you want to, any parting words?
Golly, I've just dropped the, like, this is the one thing you should know. So how do I follow that act? Maybe something simpler. I think, if you are, out there, you know, and you're serving and it's hard, that's fine because it is. I'm just saying it's good that it's hard and you have a lot to gain from the challenges. And the fact that it's hard basically says that the work isn't lowly, that the work isn't uninspiring, that it has something to teach you. Anything that is difficult has something to teach us. And, it is so common for people in the highest states of like mastery and like, you know, gurudom to deliberately play those roles, to deliberately like put themselves in those roles, to basically make contact with humanity from that place. And I'm sure they're gaining something themselves, working on themselves too. And there's many that are famous for throwing their students into those situations. So the difficulty and the dreariness is all so valuable if you just meet it with the right state of mind. And please tell me all these obstacles you're having, and write me. I'm happy to engage on my site. And just know that you aren't being forced to do it. And actually, that's the first shift that anyone can make. You aren't obligated to do anything. And there's this, the one thing that makes service difficult, like one really core thing, is thinking that we're being forced to, when we have the inner freedom to make any choice. And that choice could include starving to death, but just know that it's your choice. And to have accountability for it, and your life will change. The feeling of life will change, like, very, very dramatically. Okay, I've talked enough.
Oh, I love it. That's a great note to end on. Absolutely. Just knowing that you have that choice, absolutely, gives you so much power and kind of takes you out of the victim mode, I think, a bit. So, and that is very powerful to get out of that mindset. So thank you so much, Stefan. This was so fun. You're so refreshing. And, you know, love this kind of new perspective on this part of life, which a lot of us have engaged in and will continue to engage in at different parts of our life, and a way to really empower ourselves through it and really see it in a different way. So thank you for that. And everyone listening, I hope you go check out Stefan's project and his podcast. We'll put the links in the show notes. And until next time, Stefan, it was a pleasure.
Thank you, Alexa. Honored to be here. I really appreciate you taking the time.
Absolutely. You as well. Bye.
Bye. Ciao.